Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. So there's a clear theme for this week and all the news that's come out. Resignation, moving on. That is something we're going to talk a lot about over the course of this show because a lot of the news stories revolve around a lot of changes going on, whether it's at the Democratic Party, the Secret Service, or even right here in New Jersey. Boy, another busy news week. You think we're in the middle of the fall right now. Can you only imagine what that's going to be like? This is summer. This is supposed to be dead time. Where the biggest story is that a shark is on the edge of the Jersey Shore or something like that, you know. Something crazy. But, or maybe even the Olympics that's coming up. And I believe the opening ceremony is Friday. So today, if you are listening to this in real time, and if you're listening maybe a little later, then Friday. So that's exciting to look forward to. Something joyous, something fun. We'll be keeping an eye on all of that too. But here's the big headline of the week. Historic. Biden out, Harris in. So Vice President Kamala Harris has, and I will repeat this, has secured enough delegates to win the Democratic nomination. That's according to an Associated Press survey of all the delegates showing the vice president with an overwhelming majority of them in almost every state capturing more than 3,000 delegates. So, as you'd imagine, she's probably in a good place right now, right? Well, New Jersey's delegates for the Democratic convention voted in favor of Harris at a meeting Monday night, giving her all of the state's delegates. So all of them went to Harris. Now this comes as the president, President Biden, decided to drop out of the race, citing the best interest of the country. So that's what he's saying there. He thinks that it was not good to continue and that he needs to focus more on his duties as president. Now, he has endorsed Kamala Harris for president, offering praise for her even as recently as his Oval Office address, where he said, quote, "She is experienced, she is tough, she is capable. She's been an incredible to me and a leader for our country," close quote. In the first 24 hours of her campaign, Harris raised over $100 million. Now, she's expected to officially become the nominee at the Democratic National Convention, where all the delegates, you know, they vote on it there. But there are some circulations and rumors about a possible roll call that could be held virtually to decide who the nominee is. So that's on the table too. And she's currently weighing her VP pick of who's going to be standing beside her for the next 4 years if she does, in fact, win the presidency. Some names being thrown out there. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, and Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear. Now, there was some reporting out there that our own governor, Phil Murphy, was eyeing up a possible bid for vice president, but he is currently on vacation in Italy with the family, which was seen as the clear indicator whether he was going to be in contention or not, that the rumor would have been he would have put that on pause had he been under vetting. But since he's going over there, that probably means he's not in contention, and he hasn't really been one of the names that's been really highly circulated throughout news reports. It's mainly been the three that I have mentioned there. You know, you heard Gretchen Whitmer's name thrown around, but it seems like it's really going down to these three guys that there are going to be the pick. Now, obviously with Shapiro, he seemed to be a top contender, but as you heard, CNN's John King, that clip has been going around where he said, you know, Shapiro's Jewish faith, that's a concern. Now, why would John King say that? Well, the reason being is because of all this, of all these Israel pro-Palestinian protests, a lot of those voters do not really like to have Jewish candidates. That basically they would like someone who is more for the pro-Palestinian cause, and that they see a Jewish candidate potentially being in the way of that. So that could possibly put Shapiro, who would normally a top contender, given his status as a swing state governor, a pass. Basically, they're gonna pass right over him. Well, we'll see. Maybe Harris will want to take the risk, but given the fact that she already has a Jewish husband, that could cause some problems there, given that those voters may not necessarily embrace him the same way as he would have been in the past. But given that this Israel-Hamas issue, it is a big deal right now for the party, because right now the party is dealing with voters who, you know, voted uncommitted in the most recent primary. And they weren't too thrilled about Biden. They're somewhat thrilled about her. And you've seen her do this now where she's pledged her support for the people of Gaza, but still striking a pro-Israel tone, but then also not going to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's joint speech in front of Congress. So, you know, she's trying to walk the tightrope too on the Israel issue. And depending on how she does with it, could determine whether she gets the presidency. Because if she can't energize that base of people who don't like what's going on in Israel right now and believe that Palestine needs to be a place that is its own separate state and that Israel's kept out of it, that could be a problem. Harris could potentially lose the election on that alone. We shall see. But then Trump's got his own thing, because you hear her talking about she prosecuting the case. You know, I know his type. She's taking on this prosecutor background thing, because after all, she was the California state attorney general there for a while. She's trying to prosecute this case of why Trump is a bad guy. He's got all these indictments. He's been found liable of sexual misconduct and all these bad things. She's trying to make that as her case. Now, for Trump, he has to balance between counteracting that and not sounding like a sexist, because now Harris has the potential to be not only the first woman president, which is historic, but the first woman president of color. So that is a very, very historic thing Trump's got to watch. If he plays his cards a little, if he says something crazy, that could potentially turn off voters in the suburbs, and that could give Harris the win there too. And, you know, you hear him talking more, you know, the senior staffers on the Trump campaign, they seem to want to keep this to a policy thing. You're hearing her talk about the border czar, how she was appointed as the border czar, and they're saying she did a terrible job at the border. That might be something good, because border seems to be something that has worked for Trump in the past. That may be something that could get him over the finish line, is insulting that. Also, this cover-up thing. I mean, the whole story with Biden and why he got out of this race is kind of mysterious in itself. I mean, you looked at that Oval Office address and you didn't really get the full story there. So they are accusing him, the Trump campaign is accusing Kamala Harris and, you know, the Democratic Party, and even Joe Biden to some extent, that they were responsible for this cover-up and you shouldn't elect her because of the fact that she was dishonest before. What else are they going to hide from you? Why should they be rewarded? Is there corruption there? That you're going to see this argument. I mean, they're already running this ad. You can expect this to be a theme for the Trump campaign. And there are Democrats who are worried it may be an effective one, because the fact is that there were reports of this. I mean, you heard special counsel Robert Hur in his report call Biden. You know, he said he couldn't prosecute him because the jury would see him as an elderly man with poor memory. So there were some inklings of this before the debate performance, which ultimately led to Biden suspending the campaign. So, given that fact, they can point to that and say, whoa, hold on here. I mean, and then also the audio for that interview is currently being held up by the White House over executive privilege. And that could also be a theme that is brought back up because it's like, oh, you guys were covering this up. You guys knew he wasn't up for the job. Why should we trust you people? That is a theme the Trump campaign is going to talk about for a while. And we'll see whether the American voter is into that. Do they not like the way they were deceived? Do the Democrats not like necessarily getting to get assigned their nominee? Because, right, you saw a lot of people in the beginning talk about this open primary system that was supposed to be happening. Well, then, as you saw, all the delegates have now more or less gotten behind Harris, making it virtually impossible for anyone to challenge that. Although, it's not official till the roll call vote happens. So, you know, if someone else got in and swayed the delegates, it's possible. They don't necessarily have to get behind the person they're pledged for. Because technically, they voted for Joe Biden. That's what all these voters went out and voted for. That's where these delegates were dedicated to. And then they pulled a little switcheroo. Now, the Democrats say, well, you know, she was vice president, so it's not really that much of a stretch. She was technically elected along with him. But, you know, being a primary, the VP candidate doesn't usually appear on that ballot. It's only the general election ballot. So, obviously, that debate's going to continue. And we will have to watch and see what happens here. But Biden isn't the only Democrat who's had a step aside this week. Senator Bob Menendez is resigning following his federal conviction. The senator plans to give up his Senate seat on August 20th. This is despite Menendez staunchly resisting calls for his resignation. Even being that day of the conviction on the courthouse steps saying he's not going anywhere. Then there were the reports from NBC News that he told two people he's done. Well, he went on CBS News and said that's not true at all. So there was some ambiguity here. Okay, what's happening? Is he just pushing back? Is he going down to the nth degree? Or is he just not resigning? Is he just going to stay around? Or is he just going to deny until there's no way to deny anymore? Well, we got our question answered there. So he is going to be going away in about 3 weeks or so. That'll be the swan song for Bob Menendez. And Governor Murphy says he's ready to go. He intends on filling Menendez's seat with a caretaker. So notably, not someone who's running in this election and not a House member. He is picking a caretaker. And this decision could come as quickly as August 20th, as that's the date that Menendez is leaving, if not sooner. But given the fact that Murphy is traveling out of the country until the 11th, it probably won't be announced before then. And as I mentioned, Murphy is not picking a member of Congress, and he's not picking someone who's in this race. Now your thoughts are, okay, so is this the return of Tammy Murphy? Well, the New Jersey First Lady says that she will not be seeking the appointment there, and she's going to take a pass on this one. So, given that, that's wondering, who's Murphy going to pick? Now, this is tradition here, as that's what happened in 2013 when Frank Lautenberg passed away, that Christie picked he picked the state's attorney general at the time to fill the seat as a caretaker. He did not run. Then also back in the 80s when Tom Kaine was governor, there was someone who had to resign because of, you know, corruption scandals, and he picked a caretaker. So this is not uncommon for a governor not to do this. And also, Hakeem Jeffries at the funeral of Donald Payne Jr., who is now the deceased congressman from New Jersey's 10th district, he said, listen, we need every vote we get here. Please don't pick a House member. So Murphy listened to that advice and did that. And obviously the candidate for Senate, Andy Kim, falls under that. And also he didn't want to give an edge to anyone in the race because Curtis Bashaw was saying, whoa, that's undemocratic here. If we get him in, he's got the power of incumbency. We'll watch and see where that goes there. But in his resignation letter, Menendez says, quote, while I fully intend to appeal the jury's verdict all the way and including the Supreme Court, I do not want the Senate to be involved in a lengthy process that would distract from its important work. Close quote. So Menendez is basically trying to frame it as he's the guy who is preserving the institution. And then he's fully innocent. He believed he was going to be exonerated from this. That's not what happened. I mean, he was even running as a third-party independent candidate, although an independent Democrat, and then he was just going to go back to it if he won the election. So this is a guy who was willing to risk it all. And at the moment, it looks like he's not going to be making his return to that Senate seat. Is there going to be a future for Bob Menendez? Will an appeal ultimately be successful? Hard to know at this point in the game, but we shall see with him. But the point is that Governor Murphy is actively looking for that person to fill the seat. He seems determined, and we're going to have to see who he's going to pick, and we'll be keeping an eye on that as we go along here. Now, Menendez isn't the only one who is calling it quits this week. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle has resigned from the agency. This comes a day after she appeared before Congress in a contentious hearing where lawmakers had a lot of questions, and Cheadle didn't provide a whole lot of answers. In her resignation letter, she wrote, quote, the Secret Service's solemn mission is to protect our nation's leaders and financial infrastructure. On July 13th, we fell short on that mission. The scrutiny over the last week has been intense and will continue to remain as our operational tempo increases. As your director, I take full responsibility for the security lapse. Close quote. This follows the shooting at a Trump rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, where a gunman opened fire with a bullet striking the former president in the ear. The Secret Service has since got a lot of scrutiny and has come under fire for its failure to prevent the assassination attempt. So a lot of play here, and people were really wondering whether this was going to happen given what transpired, because a lot less worse has really happened in our nation's history, and the Secret Service director always had to resign. There were problems during the Obama administration. You may remember that, where people came very close to the president, also getting into the White House, getting into the East Wing, and that Secret Service director went. Then also what happened when Reagan got shot. That Secret Service director went. So you might not be surprised when you hear that this woman is going. The fact is that she was saying earlier on this, no, I'm not going. And that might have been more the shocking part, even as recently as the day before she resigned at that congressional hearing. And that's where a lot of members of Congress were trying to get some answers. And it was actually pretty bipartisan. You had Jamie Raskin and James Comer on the same page. Now, for anyone who follows congressional politics closely, that almost never happens. Those two guys are on the opposite end of the spectrum, just about everything. But in this case, they were hand in hand on this. You know, all the Democrats and Republicans were determined on pressing for answers here. And that might be a good political strategy for those guys when they're doing their investigations, especially into this. Because Cheadle had to come up with those answers in order to make something reputable here. Because she had the ABC interview. That didn't really do anything. So this hearing is supposed to change the game for her. Well, what happened is she was pressed on a number of things, and she didn't really provide the answers. There was a difference of whether it was a security thing or whether she just didn't know, and that was an open question. But there were a couple moments where it was obvious that there might have been a problem. And the first one was when she couldn't say whether the gunman was a lone actor or worked in collaboration. Now, be fair, the investigation's still ongoing, but for anyone who has been watching the coverage for the last couple weeks now, we know it's only been this one guy who's 20 years old and liked to be on or was attempting to be on the high school rifle team. So, yeah, he was a lone gunman as of right now. There are no reports that he had any help in this regard. So, if that's the case, then why would you say you don't know? Then, when she was asked whether she looked at the security plan before the rally, said she didn't. Now, that's for the head of the detail, not the head of the Secret Service. And that concerned people, given the fact that this is a former president, obviously a controversial figure who may have threats against him. And actually, now we know there were threats, given the fact that there was an Iranian attempted assassination plot that was at work, that the Secret Service had a foil there. So it's not unlikely that there would be foreign entities that would want to see the guy dead. He pissed some people off. And also people in this country got pissed off, especially the political climate we live in right now. So as a director, you would think you would want to take a look at that. So she didn't. And politically, she had to come with that. If she wanted to save her job, she did say take some blame in the interview. She said, the buck stops with me. And then the guy asked her, okay, well, you're going to resign? Nope. And that's when the scrutiny began. So if you want to have the answers, you have to know what you're talking about. Especially, well, every politician knows this. If you, and I get this, these are not supposed to be political people, but when you're in Washington, you have to know the game of politics. If you wanted to stay in that job, you had to be ready to go answer these questions. And the fact was, Cheadle was not ready for those questions, and that might have cost her the job ultimately. So we're going to see more of this investigation. We're going to see if Congress continues to work on it. The FBI, we heard from Christopher Wray. He provided some answers there. We found out that the guy may have possibly been looking to emulate Lee Harvey Oswald, the Kennedy assassination, the guy in charge of that. So, you know, and it's Oswald, as well, obviously there's all those conspiracies around it and theories, but basically Lee Harvey Oswald was the guy who shot John F. Kennedy. So he was saying, how far was Oswald away from Kennedy? So Thomas Crooks, who was the 20-year-old who shot Trump, that was something he looked up. So Ray told us that. Well, we'll see what developments come out of this. Is it going to be an FBI thing? Is it going to be Congress? Who's going to get at this first and really get to the bottom of this? And how is this going to change Secret Service plans going forward? That is the question we are waiting to have answered. Now, here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. As the presidential race takes new twists and turns, the governor's race here in New Jersey is heating up. Four candidates are already in on the GOP side. They're jumped in. They're ready to go. And a fifth one may possibly be joining the field as well. Republicans are currently in a battle to change their party's fortunes. The GOP hasn't elected a statewide candidate in New Jersey in over a decade, with former Governor Christie being the most recent Republican to win, and that was back in 2013. The members of the Grand Old Party are hoping history repeats itself, as Democrats nor Republicans have won a third consecutive term to the governor's mansion in over half a century. Now, Democrats currently have a nearly 930,000 voter registration edge over Republicans in the Garden State. Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is former Englewood Cliffs Republican Mayor Mario Kranjak. Mayor Kranjak, thanks for coming on.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
Focusing on this governor's race, especially on the Republican side, a number of candidates are already in this race, four candidates, but the New Jersey Globe is reporting that you are mulling a bid for governor next year as well. Are you, in fact, considering running in a Republican gubernatorial primary?
I am considering it, and I am flattered to be part of the conversation. Nothing has been decided yet. This is the year where we have to focus on getting President Trump elected back into office in order to preserve the country that we all love.
Now, obviously, I know you mentioned the election there, but just focusing on the consideration of the governor's race for a second there, you've served as mayor of Englewood Cliffs for two terms and decided not to pursue re-election, so you're no longer in that office. What made you decide? Well, I mean, I know you're still in the consideration phase, but what piqued your interest to say, maybe I could possibly run the whole state and not just, you know, my town of Englewood Cliffs in Bergen County?
Well, thank you for that question. You know, I always said that I would run for only two terms as mayor. I believe in term limits, even if they have to be self-imposed. I believe in New Jersey, the only office that is actually mandated with term limits is the governor's office. So I always promised the public that that's what I would be doing. And I, of course, did that. And a lot of people wanted me up until last August to run for a third term as mayor. But I really believe that in a good, healthy democracy, there needs to be change, new ideas, new people, and not lifelong politicians. I work every day. I've worked every day of my life since I became a teenager, and I continue to work and pay taxes and pay payroll taxes and employ people. But what I did learn as mayor was that New Jersey is broken, just as Englewood Cliffs was broken. And by extension, I believe that a lot of the things that I saw and dealt with in Englewood Cliffs exist statewide. And I really do believe that for a number of reasons, the taxpayers and the residents of New Jersey are always on the losing end. The taxpayers, the property owners, they're all in the system. Everyone knows where to tax them, and there's no incentive for politicians to actually make New Jersey a better place, a more affordable place, a better run economy with lower taxes. What I also observed, and is very disappointing, is the complete lack of the rule of law in terms of the way the state is run when it comes to judges, legislators, and executives. And I'll explain that. The legislators should be acting on certain things, and they don't act, or they act incorrectly because it's just a knee-jerk reaction to what any kind of lobby group is pressuring them to do. Then what happens is the judges that are out there in New Jersey are basically political. They change their lanes and get into the executive's lane or the legislator's lane, to the point where we actually had a judge in Bergen County usurped the authority of the mayor, usurped the authority of the council, and usurped the authority of the planning board. Now, the council and the mayor are elected by the people. Judges are not, but they're acting as if though they're executives. And then when legislators fail to act, the judges are also acting there. So everyone needs to actually do the jobs that they were appointed or elected to do, and stay out of each other's lanes. That's what that's the kind of system that we have, or supposed to have, but we don't have that. What we have is, for example, in Bergen County, we have a judge who worked at the Port Authority as an attorney her whole career, or most of her career, is on an $18,000 a month pension, as publicly reported, and yet she decided that she would close out her legal career as a judge, and just a very political, a hateful person who always despised me for saying, hey, you know what? Affordable housing is not working. It's not fair. Why are you imposing it on the residents who are already being overtaxed in the state of New Jersey? So she, of course, doubles down. And I see that throughout the state. So to answer your question very succinctly, in a short answer, New Jersey's broken just as Englewood Cliffs and Bergen County are broken. I fixed Englewood Cliffs. We either kept taxes the same or lowered them every year that I was mayor. And I don't even get to vote on certain things as mayor, as you know, but I certainly did push people to the brink of making sure that we had lower taxes.
Term limits is something you brought up there. That is something that we've heard echoed in candidates who are running off for office, particularly the governor's race, and especially former Assemblyman Jack Cittorelli is someone who has talked about term limits, how he's mentioned how he's term limited himself in every office, and that if he becomes governor, he will impose term limits on more offices. In the last gubernatorial election, you supported him as the candidate. He's currently running this time, but you have not gotten behind him at this point. What's changed for you since then?
Well, I think the whole notion of who's running our country translates into who's running our state. And I am a very proud forever Trumper. And I think that in order to have a workable relationship between a state and federal government, we need people who support each other and don't say things in the past and regret them in the future, as in the case of some of the candidates who are running for governor. I think Jack's a good man. I think John Bramnick's a good man. I know them both. I've met Bill Spadia once. I don't know Ed Durr. But I don't think anyone's actually fought the fights that I fought against Democrats. And I'm talking about just the hardcore Hudson County Democrats moving up to Bergen County who think that the entire government is put out there for them to make money on and to have all the benefits of what people would normally be working for. They just basically have their hand in the till. You saw that perfect example. One of my former constituents, Senator Menendez, right? I mean, Senator Menendez for years has been a suspect and finally has been caught doing what he shouldn't be doing. But our government's full of people like that. And we have to stop that. It's not fair to taxpayers.
You mentioned Trump and now you are a big Trump supporter. You referenced the fact that Jack Cittorelli did not support Trump in 2016, in fact, called him a charlatan, but then backed him in 2020, as well as this time in 2024. And you also mentioned State Senator John Bramnick. He is not voting for Trump in this election. He says he's going to write someone in. And it sounds like to me that you're saying that you need someone who is with the former president as a Republican candidate 100% of the time. Do you think there's room in the party for people who are not supportive of the former president? Do they have a place in your mind to be running for office?
I think everyone has a place to be running for office because we live in a democracy. So no one should be excluded. I just think that there are better people for specific jobs. And something that you said before is that now I am a Trump supporter. I've always been a Trump supporter. Just to make that clear, and his people know it, and I was front row of the rally in Wildwood when he was down there in May, and actually helped write part of the speech as it related to New Jersey.
Talking more in depth here about the candidates, there's a lot of big names. You've mentioned them: Jack Cittorelli, State Senator John Bramnick, conservative radio host Bill Spadia, and former state senator Ed Durr. They're all in this race. A lot of these people have more name ID than you do, considering they've had high profiles in state government or, conservative media or whatnot, while you've kind of been more just the mayor of a small town in Bergen County. How do you plan to compete with them to get your name out there if you are to make this journey? Because in fact is, you are the guy who's least known by these people. You're going to have to get your name out. If you jump into this thing, what would be your plan to get your name out there?
Well, I'll do what I always did, work hard. And also, we, as mayor of a little town in Englewood Cliffs, as you mentioned, which actually was the headquarters and remains the headquarters of LG Electronics, Unilever, CNBC, and Ferrari North America, I've always been able to draw the attention of the media. I think I saw more more newspapers for the Star Ledger and Bergen Record than any other mayor of a small town or big town. You had the Star Ledger coming out and hitting me as the Trumpy mayor of Englewood Cliffs, and you had the Bergen Record with their virtue signaling and just very hateful things that they wrote. But you know what? People know who I am. The voters know who I am, and they know what I've done. So I don't view that as a challenge at all. I mean, people will figure it out, and they know who I am. The others are nice people, you know, but they haven't actually fought the battles that I fought. And I wish there was somebody else that was out there doing that, but nobody is. So that's why I'm considering it. I'm flattered that people have approached me to do this potentially. No decision has been made yet.
Now, you said people approached you. I won't get into specific names, but is it like party leaders? Is it grassroots activists? Is it constituents of the town? Who are the people who are saying, you know what, Mayor Kranjak, I know you're not in office right now, but we need you to get back in office?
All of the above.
Going into what you were talking about, you said you've had some controversies that have been talked about by the Star Ledger. There are some allegations that have been pressed against you in the past. The borough council censured you 3 times while in office for accusations of harassment against municipal employees and for allegedly bullying members of that body. In 2020, you allegedly billed a local teenager $1,500 for police overtime in connection to a Black Lives Matter rally, which she organized, right, which you later rescinded. I'll point that out.
So let me stop you right there. In terms of borough employees, unfortunately, New Jersey is full of these litigious employees who decide that it's workplace or hostile workplace if you ask them to do their jobs. You know, we had a municipal clerk who quit her job and then sued. You know, and recently under her own testimony in her deposition, she admitted that while she was our head election officer, she was actually actively working the campaign of my opponent and other people's opponents. As a sworn officer to be clerk, that's what she was doing, and she had to admit it. So I don't see anything hostile about a workplace where you actually ask somebody to come in and do their jobs. And by the way, I've never taken a meeting alone with anyone in terms of borough employees. I never stepped in their office. People have tried to get me in their offices. I never did that. I said, we want to talk, we'll talk in the hallway. It was a safe way to protect my family. These people still were able to find people, lawyers to sue on behalf of them. But they've all failed. They've all failed, including the police chief who surreptitiously recorded himself, which you didn't mention, and I will. The BLM teenager, well, you know, guess what? Our law required a bill to go out. So my duty is to bill people if that's what the law requires. I didn't make that law. The council did, and the council changed that law after. But quite frankly, I mean, if the rule of law has no feelings, right, just like facts have no feelings, if that's the law, that's what we're going to do. Now, too many people in the Republican Party in New Jersey are actually this different side of the same coin as the Democrats who have ruined the state. So that's what we have to fix. And I think a lot of it entails educating the public to understand why it is that their taxes are going up, why it is that their schools are being infiltrated with indoctrination rather than education. People need to understand that. And then people need to understand who did that. And then people need to understand that the people who did that need to not be in office. I'm sure there's other jobs for these people to do, but they should not be running a state. They should not be running a county. They should not be running towns. They should not be running our residents' lives.
Just to go off of that, I know you deny these allegations that are against you, but the fact is, you know, this type of information is going to spread out there. You know, you're going to be running in a primary. Your opponents are more likely going to use this stuff against you. So for Republicans out there, you know, who may not be too thrilled with the candidates that are out there now, maybe looking for a fifth option out there, why should they turn to you given this information that's going to be heard out there?
It's just noise, right? And as I always say, a confident campaign never needs to go negative. So if they want to do things based on innuendo, I can't control that. But I know the person I am. I know the people who support me. I know what I've accomplished in my life. I've started with zero. I worked in a factory most of high school and college. That's it. But also, you have to remember, the other people who are running for governor never actually had to fight the battles I fought. You know, if you're an executive like I was, you're front and center. But if you're in the legislature, you could hide behind others. You don't have to take a leadership position in anything, really, if it's uncomfortable. Or if you're on the radio, you could just parrot whatever you think is going to be the flavor of the day. You know, everyone has their own circumstances in life. Now, I'll tell you that the litigations in the town were for the most part frivolous. Nothing was ever done wrong. It's just that the way that the town is structured and insurance companies are structured with these towns and municipal insurance policies, what happens is they pay these people. They pay these people to go away. And that's patently unfair to taxpayers. No one ever actually goes to trial, you know, and that's a pity because a lot of these employees, like the clerk that I gave you an example of, she failed upward. She went to another town for a no advertised job, no advertised, no bid, and is making more money. God only knows what she's doing there. But the system basically just recycles these bad employees around and around and around. And we got to stop that.
Now let's talk money. Because if you are to make this run, you're going to have to do some fundraising, obviously. And most of these candidates have already raised a significant amount of money. You look at Cittarelli and Bramnick, they've gotten $1.2 million and $1.14 million respectively, while Spadia received $477,000 in just the first 2 weeks of his campaign. With all these candidates in the race, it splits up the amount of money to go around. If you get into this thing, what is your plan in terms of the fundraising? How do you get your piece of the pie here, given that there's all these candidates? And then, of course, Ed Durr, he says he hasn't started fundraising yet. Once he gets started, he's going to be having his hand in the pot, too.
Oh, good for them. You know, I never look at what other people are doing. I always do what I think is the right thing to do. And I've always had a plan, and I've always been successful in business and in law and everything else that I've done. I'm highly confident if that's what we end up doing, that won't be a problem at all.
Do you see yourself going more towards grassroots funding? Do you see yourself reaching out to big dollar donors? How would you see yourself? I know you're in the early stages of your decision process, but how would you envision the fundraising aspect of a potential campaign?
Well, I'm not going to tell you the particulars, but I'm highly confident. It's never been an issue. I don't lose any sleep over it, neither will I. By the way, don't forget that Englewood Cliffs had a father and son mayor for 42 years. And everyone said, you'll never beat them. You'll never beat the machine. Well, not only did we beat the machine, we actually did very well. And then 4 years later, guess what everybody was saying? You'll never beat them again. And I beat them again. So I know what it takes to do things. Again, I haven't decided if I am or not doing anything here. But I never lose. And no, I was going to say, I never lose. And however, the taxpayers and citizens of New Jersey seem to have a very long track record of losing, not because of them, but because of the people who they elect. And we have to stop that. And at some point, someone has to run against a Democrat to become governor, which is going to be a challenge. I have a track record of beating Democrats, in particular Hudson County Democrats.
In terms of a decision, obviously the race, the primary is not till June of next year, but convention season, if there is a county organizational line, which is a whole issue in itself, that would be starting up in the winter time, around February, something around there. when do you see yourself making this final decision, whether you're going to jump in or whether you're going to be like, you know what, not this time, I'll let someone else do it?
Well, as I said before, I am singularly focused right now on getting President Trump elected, reelected, I guess is the appropriate way of saying it. That is what we need. We need him to get elected as president.
So would you say that you're not going to make a decision until after the presidential election?
I'll let you know when I do.
All right, we will have to see where that goes there. But before I let you go, I do have to ask you about a little bit of a transportation debacle that's been going on right now. There's been a lot of delays and cancellations on NJ Transit as of late. The agency has been pinning the blame on extreme heat and wire problems with Amtrak. If you were governor right now, how would you address this issue?
Everyone who runs, actually both Amtrak and New Jersey Transit, need to be replaced. Look, I just spent a week in Europe on business with clients and took trains everywhere. In 9 minutes, you could be from an airport to downtown in a lot of cities. And the equipment is much better than any equipment we have, even on the commuter rails. So there is no reason why at this day and age in America, we should suffer on train cars. I've been taking the train for several months now up from Monmouth County, and it's really appalling. And it seems like everyone's given up. So maybe there's a private-public joint venture that needs to be prepared. There needs to be some high-speed train tracks put down separate from the existing tracks. There needs to be a lot of work done and a lot of investment. And unfortunately, a lot of the investment these days is not going into a better service or a better consumer experience. It's going out the door in other areas of the balance sheet for New Jersey Transit and for Amtrak. There's no excuse for what we have. This is America. This is New Jersey. We should have the best rail service in the world. There's no reason not to have that. And anyone who's telling you that they're blaming each other, well, they only have themselves to blame, each of them. There's no excuse for this. I mean, if you sit there and you see people with their feet up on the seats and the conductors walk by and don't say anything, you have to wonder how much pride is there in that business or in that service. And that's what you see if you ride the rails. I don't know if you do or not. It needs to be fixed, and the people who run it need to be replaced. And no one's ever accountable, unfortunately. In a lot of these government positions, no one ever gets fired. Has any Secret Service agent been fired who's supposed to be protecting President Trump? Nope. You know, you go down the list, no one ever gets fired. Everybody seems to fail upwards. And the whole notion of a meritocracy has been lost. And we need to bring that back. In fact, you know, when years ago, when we had this police chief that was, I would just say suspect and eventually left. But when he was replaced, the police officers in my towns were thanking me for giving them their careers back and their professionalism back, because we appointed somebody who actually was a professional and not a political hack. And a lot of these towns have political hacks running them. Same thing with the infrastructure. These people have gotten too comfortable. They need to be replaced.
Going back to NJ Transit real quick, you said that it needs to be innovated here. There needs to be some work done with the money. But the reality is, money is tight for NJ Transit. I mean, you see them now raising fares. Now there is a 15% price hike that's gone into effect with an expected 3% annual increase. Then you
talk about good timing, right? Talk about great timing. Your service is going down and you're raising the rates.
Exactly. And then also you have this, you know, spot in the state budget recently where they have put a tax in place on corporate businesses to fund NJ Transit. If they're struggling to get the money the way it is now, how are they going to get money for what you're talking about? Would you tax more money to the citizens? Would you raise the fares? Where would that money come from to put in these high-speed rails that you're talking about?
I also, and you forgot to mention what I told you, it should be a public-private partnership where capital markets are investing in the infrastructure along with private companies. And there needs to be an incentive to run a better service. To answer your question, no, fares should not go up. Taxes should not go up. The quality of service should go up. We've become so accustomed to mediocrity in terms of some of the services that the government provides that we need to reverse that trend and do what other countries have done in terms of public-private partnerships with rail and travel.
Well, we'll have to see where this all goes. Former Englewood Cliffs Republican Mayor Mario Kranjak, thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Well, that about does it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on X at @block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you've never heard of this show before and you just found it, you're like, oh my God, I love the show. It's so great, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You need to go to that browser of yours. You have to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Get ready for us. It's foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You put that in, it'll take you right to the Fox Sports New Jersey podcast page. You're going to scroll down until you find in the middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that and all the episodes will be there. We'll have the newest ones at the top for you and we will have the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Well, thank you so much for listening. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.